Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we got a lot to talk about on this beautiful weekend. Hope you're going to join us for the next hour or so, and we invite you to call us. 888-302-3684 is our number. Many stories to share with you because it's been a busy week on the health front. And I guess we'll start with this story. This is a kind of a clickbait headline, you know, designed to lure you in, and then you read the story. Headline, doctors want to cure obesity with freeze-dried poop pills. Okay. You know, that'll get your attention. And the story proceeds, as gross as it may sound, popping freeze-dried fecal pills might one day cure obesity. And you might be instructed by your doctor to take them to lose weight. Turns out the researchers from Massachusetts General Hospital will undertake a trial. Hey, any volunteers? You want to sign up for the poop pill trial? I hope they pay well. They're going to test these freeze-dried fecal pills on 20 obese patients. Each day for 6 weeks, these individuals will ingest a few grams of somebody else's freeze-dried fecal matter while researchers track their weight. And so what's going on here? Well, the idea is that your microbiome, the bacteria that inhabit your intestinal tract, may have a lot to do with your metabolism. They may influence digestion. They may influence absorption of nutrients. And they may even help with hormonal signals to either retain weight or burn it off. It may be that insulin resistance, to some extent, is controlled by the bacteria that inhabit your intestine. And insulin resistance is a condition where fat becomes ever more tenacious as insulin increases. So, interesting prospect, and it turns out that actually poop pills are being used for at least one particular condition, which is a very severe form of diarrhea called C. difficile. C. difficile is something that arises when you take too many antibiotics. And it's a very, very serious type of diarrhea, sometimes responds to antibiotics, but more and more it's becoming resistant to antibiotics. And patients literally are wasting away with terrible, terrible watery diarrhea. And then they take these poop pills from healthy donors, people with normal gastrointestinal tracts, and then they normalize. They stop having diarrhea. They end up regaining their weight. And in one celebrated case, this is very interesting, one patient is now suing because she gained too much weight. And what she's saying is that they didn't properly screen the donors. Maybe she got a poop pill from a fat person, and thus started to go into the same metabolic blind alley that fat person had that made them fat. So, you know, based on this notion that the gastrointestinal bacteria govern your metabolism, we're going to see more and more work on this. Yeah, but everybody's looking for the ultimate probiotic. You know, on the internet, they're going to try and sell you probiotics that specifically designed to help you lose weight, but they're not yet ready for prime time. But here's an article that suggests that it may not be all that simple. Just taking a little yogurt or taking a probiotic or even a specially designed poop pill may not be enough to turn the tide against obesity. You know, we're getting fatter and fatter. There's no question about it as a society. And here's an ominous warning from scientists writing in the journal Nature. It's one of the foremost scientific journals in the world, so this is pretty highfalutin stuff. What they're saying is that over generations, we may be losing are good bacteria, and that this is not easily reversible, that this may be a trend in modern society that may create a susceptibility to degenerative diseases that are passed along from generation to generation. Because, look, you pass along your genes when the sperm meets the egg and then a baby starts growing. Okay, the genetic material from the father and mother joined together and form the ovum and then the embryo and then the fetus and then the baby's born. Okay, it's like the DNA of mom and dad, roughly 50-50. But what else gets transferred from generation to generation? Actually, bacteria get transferred from generation to generation. It's inevitable is that in the birth passage through the womb, the bacteria from mom get transferred to the baby, or just being in close proximity to your parents transfers bacteria to the offspring. And what they're saying here, they did this research using lab mice, and they fed lab mice a bad diet, kind of like a Western diet, that was absent some of the really high fiber nutrients that are found in the diets of hunter-gatherer tribes. There are very few hunter-gatherer tribes still living in the world. This whole way of life is becoming extinct, but these folks eat very, very high fiber diets. And the results were very stark in the mice. They had increasingly impoverished populations of normal bacteria. Okay? So, all right, well, that, you know, kind of makes sense. Yeah, we know that we're killing off our good bacteria with our Western lifestyles. But here's the catch. Even when they put the mice back on a high-fiber diet, it did not succeed in restoring balance to their intestines. So this is very, very disconcerting. It may mean that the good bacteria that help us maintain healthy metabolism are gradually becoming extinct over generations and generations of bad eating, and that they're actually transferred from parent to child to grandchild in successive generations, creating diseases, creating a propensity to overweight that may be very, very hard to overcome. It's a scary prospect, according to these writers in the journal Nature. I mean, look, we can do the best we can by taking probiotics, by starting back on healthy diets. But to some extent, what they're saying is the damage has already been done after centuries, particularly the latest 100 years or so of civilization. Antibiotics, lots of sugar in the diet, acid-blocking medication, chlorinated and fluoridated water that may kill off beneficial bacteria. These are factors that have resulted in the deterioration of the microbiome. And, you know, just taking a poop pill may not restore it to normalcy. All right. Now that I cheered you up with that good news, we'd love to hear from you. 888-302-3684 is our number. We got lots more to talk about. We'll look in on Charlie Sheen's latest shenanigans. We'll take a look at how tomatoes may be a trigger of gout and arthritis, and why fish intake by pregnant women improves the growth of a child's brain. All that and more on this weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We'll be right back.
Are you waking up each day to the life you have to live or to the life you want to live? Better health shouldn't be left to chance. Smart choices to living longer and stronger include making Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract a part of your daily routine. For years, medical researchers have recommended adding chiolic to the diet as a powerful tool to enhancing overall heart and immune health. Recent clinical studies at UCLA Medical Center using chiolic suggest that garlic may slow plaque formation in the arteries and support healthy cholesterol and homocysteine levels. Previous research also shows chiolic may enhance your immune system defenses. Chiolic is organic, odorless, and the only antioxidant garlic supplement available worldwide. Maintaining a healthier you could extend your life. Your wellness begins with Chiolic Aged Garlic Extract, available everywhere fine nutritional supplements are sold. Visit Chiolic.com, that's K-Y-O-L-I-C.com, or call 1-800-421-2998 for a free sample today.
Why do I use Clear Sinus Care? Because I like to breathe.
Because I hate having a dry nose.
There are a lot of reasons to use Clear Sinus Care, the nasal rinse and sinus spray with xylitol. But the best reason is because it works.
I use Clear because my doctor told me to.
Because it's all natural.
Clear, spelled X-L-E-A-R, moisturizes and soothes those dry and irritated sinuses. Clear Sinus Care not only helps with dry air problems, it also helps wash away pollens, pollutants, and other airborne contaminants, making your sinus passageways all clear.
Because my snoring was keeping my wife awake.
Because now I'm not all stuffed up.
And because it's all natural, Clear is 100% safe for children. The perfect way to keep your whole family healthy and breathing right. Prevent the misery and stop the suffering with Clear. That's X-L-E-A-R at Clear.com and fine retailers.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. We invite you to call us, 888-302-3684, 888-302-3684. We know it's a busy weekend for you. Maybe you're just not inclined to call. You're too busy. You're in a car. But if you do not call us, there's a way to get your question to us. You can email your question to radioprogram, one word, radioprogram at AOL.com. And we won't write an answer back to you. No, we can't do that because there's such a volume of questions. But we will use your question as fodder, as grist for the mill, on our weekly Q&A with Layla, which is a session in which we answer listener questions that they send in via email. So radioprogram@AOL.com, and keep listening to our podcasts, our weekly Q&A with Layla. And eventually, you'll hear an answer to your most pressing question. All right. Charlie Sheen goes off the rails again. Who'd have thunk? I mean, such a level-headed young man. Remember, winning, winning. Yeah, that was his slogan. And now, shortly after his announcement that he is HIV positive, he's now claiming that he's gone off his HIV medications. And he's seeking alternative treatment in Mexico. This actually created an opportunity for an appearance on the Dr. Oz show last week, wherein Mr. Sheen said, quote, I've been off my meds for about a week now. Am I risking my life? Sure, so what? That doesn't faze me at all. Okay. Well, all right. So here's the deal on this. There was a time, and I was part of this. I graduated medical school right around the time that AIDS hit New York big time. And I went into a residency program at New York University Hospital and the Manhattan VA Hospital and Bellevue. And Bellevue was ground zero for the AIDS epidemic. And we were confronted with patients, and we had no idea what to do about these guys, mostly guys, but also some women, most of them prostitutes, IV drug users, and they were dying of a mysterious disease. We didn't know what to do about it. And there was nothing, zero, in our arsenal to treat them. We could sort of keep them comfortable, but they progressed and eventually succumbed to terrible complications. And it was around that time that alternative treatments started to offer the prospect that at least, not necessarily cure, but at least we could keep these guys well. And this is the subject of a movie that I recommend very highly to you about that era, the 1980s, early 1990s. It's called Dallas Buyers Club, starring Matthew McConaughey. Great movie. And it describes the frenzy at a time where there was no available treatment for HIV. And in fact, the drugs that were initially offered were dangerous, far too powerful, not helpful, made a lot of guys and gals sick. And so it was appropriate to go down to Mexico and check out, you know, what was available, vitamin supplements, juicing, intravenous vitamin C, hyperbaric ozone treatments, all manner of treatment designed to at least suppress the virus. But then along came a time, and it's remarkable how quickly the scientific community responded to this challenge, that around the early 90s to the mid-90s, medications came on stream. This is 20 years ago. That actually can effectively treat and halt the progression of HIV. So it makes total sense these days for patients to take conventional HIV medications. I know that some of you who are big fans of natural medicine don't want to hear that, conventional medicines really do work, but they do, and it's appropriate to take them. However, that doesn't mean that someone with HIV or any other serious illness should not undertake a program of good nutrition, right kind of supplementation, natural support, because it's going to mean that the medications are going to work all that much better and their side effects will be alleviated. Well, anyway, Charlie Sheen went off his HIV medications, and this is extremely imprudent because it gives a chance for the virus to replicate. Viral counts may soar during that time. And literally on this, Dr. Asha, it was kind of dramatic. They had Charlie's personal physician on the show literally begging him to get back on his medications. And it turns out he did. The whole thing seems like, yeah, it's kind of like a little bit of a publicity stunt. Sheen said he's seeking treatment from Dr. Sam Chachua, a physician who is in Mexico. I've met the guy. And he treats a lot of cancer patients with alternative treatments. But I'm pretty sure that he hasn't cornered the market on an AIDS cure that is administered in a small clinic in Mexico. And probably this is to the great disadvantage of Charlie Sheen. All right. Tomatoes may trigger gout. All right. We tend to think, what triggers gout? We tend to think, well, you know, red meat, alcohol, certain aged meats. These are typical gout culprits. But it turns out that tomatoes may be a gout trigger. The researchers looked at nearly 13,000 subjects. The analysis revealed that tomato consumption was linked to higher levels of uric acid in the blood. So when people say that tomatoes bother their joints, yeah, there really may be something to it. The no nightshade diet provides relief to many sufferers of arthritis. It is worth undertaking. And if you've got gout, very, very important to eliminate tomatoes. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 888-302-3684 is our number for this weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine.
The future of holistic health is here. Possessing the power to maintain wellness at the cellular level, RegActive is a revolutionary and remarkable new supplement that will transform the future of preventative and restorative health. RegActive features the innovative probiotic strain ME3, a patented probiotic with over 20 years of research proven to naturally stimulate and produce glutathione, the body's master antioxidant. Glutathione is used by all of our cells, especially in the fight against free radicals, environmental toxins, and the effects of aging. Our levels of glutathione decrease dramatically as we age, leaving us very vulnerable to age-related health issues. Revolutionary, remarkable, RegActive. RegActive is from Essential Formulas, renowned for introducing Dr. O'Hara's probiotics to the United States 15 years ago. Look for RegActive at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide where Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are sold.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we've got time for your phone calls. Should you care to call us, 888-302-3684, this hour or next. And this item has to do with how to allergy-proof your child. You know, the recommendation in the past has been that if you're from a family where there's a lot of allergies, or if your child has signs of allergic problems, that you better withhold peanuts peanut allergy is just soaring in its occurrence. And part of it has to do with the fact that more and more people are subsisting on peanut butter. Peanut butter is a popular food. And if you go back, 100 years ago, not that many people were consuming peanut butter. You know, peas, eating goober peas. You know, that's the old-fashioned Deep South food. But peanut butter really wasn't popularized until when I was a kid. And then more and more folks are eating peanut butter. There's something particularly allergenic about peanuts. And peanut allergy, really serious problem, because it doesn't just cause minor allergic symptoms. It can kill you. There was a headline a few years back about the kiss of death. There was a young gal who was very, very scrupulous about avoiding peanuts. And, you know, even look at packages now, and they say that something that you're eating doesn't contain peanuts, but may have been prepared at a factory where peanuts are processed. So, you know, that degree of sensitivity means that, you know, even if there's a tiny, like a few molecules of peanut there, could be a problem. Well, anyway, this girl kissed her boyfriend, and the boyfriend had just had a peanut butter sandwich, and it killed her. Literally. The lingering peanut residue in his mouth was enough to send her into anaphylaxis. Well, okay, big problem. And new recommendations about exposure to potentially allergenic foods. And it could be peanuts. It could be fish, you know, fish and shellfish, very, very extreme allergic reactions. The American Academy of Pediatrics has now reversed its stand and recommends that infants be given peanuts before the age of one. Wow. How about that? The incidence of peanut allergy, they say, has more than doubled between 2000 and 2008. It's literally 2%. And so, you know, these school fairs and parties, they're peanut-free zones because of the potential for allergy. Well, researchers in Britain performed a randomized control trial in 640 high-risk infants, not just regular kids, but kids who had severe eczema or egg allergy. And they found that early peanut introduction, and the window of opportunity here is, look, you're not going to give a peanut to like a newborn baby or, you know, a six-week-old. But they found that the window of opportunity is from 4 to 11 months. And giving some peanuts or peanut butter to kids in that age range, even if they were predisposed to allergy, lowered the risk for developing peanut allergy by 80%. Compared with waiting until after 5 years of age. So, you know, it's just kind of scary thing for parents, because you give the peanuts and you just stand back and you hope for the best. If you want to be really sure, start your kid on eating all foods, including peanuts, during the first year of life. But if a child has severe eczema or other known food allergy, consider having the first dose administered in the doctor's office, because there they have the means to reverse an allergic reaction, probably with something like an EpiPen. Epinephrine will reverse severe allergic reactions. Or, if you want, consult with an allergist for some skin prick testing prior to experimenting with these potentially problematic foods. But it's kind of pretty basic strategy. It's like, start the kids early. And it kind of squares with other types of allergic situations where it's been shown that if you raise a kid with pets early, or if you raise a kid on a farm early, early exposure will make it less likely that they develop allergies altogether, but specifically allergies to animals. So it's kind of like the immune system has to get primed at an early age. And if you wait too long, it might overreact. All right, so here's another way that you can allergy-proof your child, and that's with fish oil. According to the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, they had a bunch of articles on administering fish oil to moms or kids to see if it would have an impact on the kids. And it's known that fish intake by pregnant women improves the growth of a child's brain. In fact, a recent study that was done in Japan showed that if you restrict the essential fatty acids from experimental animals, their brains are literally smaller. So you got to give adequate amounts of omega-6 and omega-3 oils to moms. We'll transfer it via the placenta. And then kids can begin to get it via the breast milk and or via supplements. Not big honking fish oil pills, but they're liquid supplements that you can give kids. And the idea is this can make your kids smarter. Well, American Journal of Clinical Nutrition did a bunch of studies. They found that there wasn't that much of a difference in terms of kids' intellectual development, whether moms supplemented with DHA, which is the business end of fish oil that seems to work best for brain. However, there was a good effect in terms of reducing the children's propensity to allergic disorders, and that would be skin problems, that would be asthma. So there was indeed a payoff to prenatal use of fish oil supplements, ultimately, you know, I still think that the evidence will bear out the beneficial effects on children's intellectual performance, brain function, when they're getting adequate amounts of EPA and DHA. All right. This item has to do with the sleep deprivation and the effects on the body's metabolism. You know, they're commercials, and they're mostly hype, that say, watch the pounds melt away while you sleep. No, you don't have to go on a restrictive diet. You don't have to exercise. You don't get sweaty. Just sleep away the pounds with this magic formula, whatever it is. And I don't believe in most of these things, but it turns out that there may be some truth to the statement, because sleep deprivation and chronic stress make you gain weight. Researchers at Stanford University reported in December that stress hormones such as cortisol is the body's own prednisone. And we know that you take prednisone, it's going to fatten you up. Well, your body makes its own form of prednisone. It's a stress response hormone. And high levels of hormone are released during waking hours. And, you know, if you sleep adequately, that's not a big deal. But if you have sleep deprivation, your cortisol goes way up. And we see this sometimes when we look at patients at the Hoffman Center. We measure their cortisol, and we find that their levels of cortisol are sky high. And that prevents them from losing their body fat. Their body fat accumulates around that. So it can be a vicious cycle, because when you don't sleep, you get fatter. And when you get fatter, you produce more and more cortisol. And guess what? Cortisol prevents you from sleeping well. You get into a vicious cycle of poor sleep, and the sleep deprivation creates further impetus to weight gain, and on go. It increases your appetite big time. Have you noticed that, you know, you can go to sleep hungry, you sleep another 7 or 8 hours, you wake up, you're not that hungry. But if you stay up really, really late, you're going to go to the refrigerator and look for a snack, right? Hunger signals will get in the way of your resolve. So you can literally sleep away the pounds. Sleep optimization is really an important part of how we can get people to lose weight. All right, it was bound to happen. It was bound to happen. With the advent of these trackers, you know, the Fitbit and all these different trackers that people use, you know, to see how many steps you take, to see if you're sleeping well. You know, all these tracker devices are all the rage. It was just a matter of time before they invented this. It's called the Sex Fit. It's the world's first penis pedometer. And it will literally calculate your mileage in the bedroom. Uses a technology called the accelerometer. You ever wonder how these things work? They have like a little device inside, And movement triggers the digital counter that shows you how many steps you've taken. Well, hey, you can do the same thing with sexual performance, and you can measure the quality and quantity of your performance using an accelerometer. And the device is wireless, so it syncs up to your mobile device, and it will record statistics and even give you the amount of calories burned during a particular robust session. And, of course, hey, there's an option for for social media. Because if you're truly proud of your accomplishments in the bedroom, you can upload your statistics via social media. Oh, yeah. Okay. So, you know, we're putting sexual performance on a par with, you know, hey, look, how many calories did you expend? Probably not that many. But, you know, add that to your overall performance tracking. It was bound to happen. It was bound to happen. 888-302-3684 is our number. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is Intelligent Medicine.
As we embark on the new year, many people are making resolutions to eat better. More and more Americans are seeking out protein, a nutrient that's an important part of a healthy eating routine. But it's not enough to simply get enough protein. When you get protein is just as important. Registered dietitian Holly Granger has some advice.
Americans tend to eat most of their protein in the evening, but spacing protein intake throughout the day can help optimize how your body uses it. I recommend getting around 25 to 30 grams of protein at each meal, including breakfast, yet most people only get around 13 grams in the morning. Pairing milk and its high-quality protein with your breakfast is an easy, delicious way to help get to 25 to 30 grams of protein before noon. Powering up your morning with a protein-rich breakfast, including milk, can help energize mornings. Plus, you'll also feel fuller longer so you can focus on the things you want to accomplish.
Visit MilkLife.com/morningprotein or follow #MyMorningProtein to get tips and learn how you can win free milk.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. And it's a good time for me to share with you my experience with something called the Whole 30 diet. The Whole 30 diet is something that I embarked on all around Christmas Day, which was kind of challenging because right around holiday time, there's lots of parties, lots of delicious temptations, lots of boxes of chocolates arriving at my office from well-wishers, and lots of opportunities to drink booze. Right, the holidays is a lot about champagne and cocktails and delicious wines, and so I decided to get a little jump on my New Year's resolution, which was to explore a somewhat different type of diet. And I started out, you know, prior to doing the Whole 30, on a pretty decent diet. I eat a lot of natural foods. I don't eat gluten. I avoid dairy, but I did have kind of a yen for dark chocolate, which, I thought was virtuous, and it is to some extent, because cocoa is a really beneficial substance. It's rich in polyphenols, but also even 85% chocolate is pretty rich in sugar. And I noticed myself, going through my meals, starting to think about dessert, which was a couple of squares of dark chocolate. And, I enjoy a cocktail now and then. It's no biggie. And I was feeling pretty good, having my gluten-free toast for breakfast with my eggs. And so I didn't embark on the Whole 30 diet out of a desire to lose weight or because I was feeling bad or feeling sick. However, there's lots of resources on the Whole 30 diet on the internet and many testimonials about how people overcome conditions like diabetes, lose scads and scads of weight, 50, 60 pounds, how they overcome serious autoimmune diseases. It's not too different than the Walls diet, which is a paleo diet that is recommended for multiple sclerosis. So what does it consist of? Well, I actually wrote a review of my initial experience with the Whole 30 at drhoffman.com. You can read that extensive review there. The Whole 30 diet, oh, by the way, I will write, once I get done with the 30 days, I'm on day 21 now, And so once I complete the whole 30, I'm going to share with you my overall impressions of the diet and how ultimately I felt, because it's a work in progress. The Whole 30 diet is a diet that avoids all grains. There's no grains. So the rice that I would have with my protein and my vegetables, there's none of that. The Whole 30 diet also avoids all legumes. So no beans, but also no peanut butter. Since, did you realize peanuts are a legume? They're not really a nut. They're a legume. So there's no peanut butter, which I missed very sorely. No alcohol, no sugar whatsoever, no added sugar. And you got to kind of be a sleuth and look for added sugar in things like ketchup, right? Or, you know, salad dressings sometimes have sugar in them. And so you don't want to do added sugar. It is not a diet that is exceedingly low in carbohydrates. It depends. You want to dial down the carbohydrates and lose lots of weight, fine. But for me, my goal wasn't to lose weight, and I work out at a pretty high level. I swim and I bike and spin and run. And so I didn't want to deny myself carbohydrate calories altogether. So the alternatives for obtaining carbohydrates are, you can eat potatoes, you can eat sweet potatoes, you can eat butternut squash, and butternut squash is really delicious. You can't have any dairy. So I was using butter. Instead of butter, I now use ghee, which is clarified, so the protein is eliminated from the butter oil. And it has really been interesting, because what I noticed early on, or first I had a little bit of power failure. I felt, you know, a little weaker in my exercise. I still was able to do exercise, but I felt a little gassed because I was missing those extra carbs and the sugar. But after about 3, 4, 5 days, I went back to my normal athletic performance. I didn't notice I was getting necessarily better, stronger, faster, but I accommodated to the diet. And, you know, in terms of weight, one of the things about the diet, they say don't jump on the scale. You know, don't get addicted to jumping on the scale, because that's not what it's about. It's about feeling better. It's an experiment, like a science fair project. See how you do, how you react to the foods that you've eliminated. So I may have lost a couple of pounds. I don't know. My clothes seem to fit a little looser, but my goal wasn't weight loss. But what I did notice is complete abolition of my sweet cravings. You know, I used to really be thinking about that dessert or, you know, something a little sweet. No, none of that. Zero. And alcohol cravings, you know, a couple of times I felt a little aggravated or something. I feel like, yeah, like do a little cocktail. No, then gone, zero. But what I do notice is that my focus and concentration is really through the roof. And these kind of like times during the day where you feel kind of like low energy, like after lunch. Sometimes at work after lunch, I'd feel like, ugh, you know, tired, you know, kind of knocked out. Virtually none of that with this diet. And you almost have to remind yourself to eat. You're free of cravings. So you can go hours and hours without eating. And then, you know, after about 5, 6 hours without eating, you get a real hollow feeling inside and you say, okay, you know, going to eat. But you eat proportionally. You don't put on, the feed bag and eat and eat and eat, and then look forward to putting a dessert on top of that, even though you're all bloated and full. It's a really satisfying kind of diet. And the other thing that's come up for me is I've noticed that my ability to discern flavors is much greater. Like I had a salad with vinaigrette and walnut oil dressing and beets and onions and, of course, lettuce and all kinds of healthy ingredients, some walnuts on top. And I could discern the flavor of each and every one of the ingredients. And it was just really delicious. And it actually tasted, you'd be surprised, it tasted sweet. And this is actually a known phenomenon. If the less sweets you have, the more acute your taste for sweets will become, which is kind of good. So people who eat a lot of sweets, they actually have a blunted sensation of sweet. And therefore, they need stronger and stronger sweets to satisfy their sweet craving. Once you get off sweets, you will find sweetness in foods that you didn't really think were sweet. The sweetness will become a more acute sensation. It just takes a matter of a few days before that happens. So I'm pretty happy with the way I'm feeling, and I'll report to you at the end of this in a a blog in our newsletter. Subscribe to our newsletter at drhoffman.com to get useful health information and my comments on my ultimate verdict on the Whole 30 diet. Check it out on the internet, the Whole 30 diet. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.